Hi everyone, and welcome to the Curve Mindset Podcast from McGinley Coaching. I'm your host and founder, Lorna McGinley. Today we're joined by Julie Grundy. How are you, Julie?
I'm very well, thank you.
Obviously, it's taken a bit of time to get going, obviously through work and, you know, but can you just tell us a wee bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, of course. Being the female game, I don't want to admit this, 35 years now, so I'm not going to tell how old I am. I'm an athlete. That's from a journey of playing career across to coaching and football development. So I've given a wide spread of roles throughout my career as well.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that kind of throughout the podcast, but can you just tell us, what's the kind of the best moment in football you've seen so far, coaching, but also maybe not as a coach, as a fan?
I think evidently I'm going to just obviously mention the Euros, the Women's Euros, and obviously the World Cup. It's a shame we just missed out, but I'm so pleased that Spain did obviously win that final, especially with the backlash of what's happening now. I think it's more evident that that's really important.
Yeah.
It's a shame it's taking spotlight of what's happening now, but I really like. Really want to make it quite evident that the female game has not just been going over the last 10 years, it's historically been going on for a lot longer than that. And the trailblazers before, the people that's rightly so getting limelight now, has paved the way for this to happen. There's been a lot of hard work over the last 20 years to get to where we are now. So for me, very emotional moment, very proud moment being in the female game. And I think it's just a sign of now things to come.
Yeah. And as a kind of coach, you've obviously worked with many, many players through this, but what's the kind of the highlight? Do you think the highlight sometimes is actually not the winning, is actually the progression of the player, you know, from maybe the shy girl to the one who's like got the most potential, but actually there's, you look at the Spanish game, as you say, but also you look at the English game too, and it's just so many players now go to England, you know, because the game's expanding. Is that something you've seen, you know, through your kind of career, that the biggest win sometimes is just to go on the pitch, just to get the over that barriers? Because as you say, it's been 10 years, it's been a long, long time. And obviously there was the ban too. What's the kind of feeling that you've had, you know, working in this game for so long that you've dealt with so many different players?
I think, first of all, it's one, for me, 100% recognition that these are female game, and I want to get to a point where it's not just female game, men's game, it's just football.
Mm-hmm.
We're not just female coaches, yeah. It's football coaches, you know, it's that. So we'll get there to that point. I think, to answer your question in terms of, is that development v results, especially in the pro game piece, isn't it? Is it just about winning, or is it about developing players? I think it's more important, it's about developing people as well, because I think, you know, not just the men's game, the female game, the percentage of players that will go into a first team environment, whether it be in the WSL or Championship, is extremely minimal now, especially with overseas players coming in, and rightly so, because we have to do that to be able to compete on the world stage. Hence, that's why we are where we are with England at the moment. They're playing in Champions League, obviously playing in teams abroad, and it just helps to expand that as well. But going back to that, for me, it is a development piece, and it's making sure that, like I said, not just as a player, but more as an individual, and that lifestyle piece, especially my experience working in the foundation, heavily in the YDP phase, but as well in the pro game as well. I think it's really important that the girls, I mean, I've seen so many girls that's come into the environment, and you've seen them either shy, you know, quite low in self-esteem with different things. So in terms of that welfare piece, I think it's really important to get to know that individual and helping them through that probably lifestyle piece that they're struggling with, maybe. Because fundamentally, if they're happy, they play well and they play happy.
Yeah, and also that comes from coaching too, because the biggest thing is, see, when we're working in the game, you know, as I say, it's football, you know, it's just the best sport in the world. Maybe that is impartial, but the biggest thing I see now is it's a lot more coaches that are going into the game, but this may be a bit more with what you've been working on, but there's a lot of young coaches and they want to get to the top very, very, very quickly, you know, but there's a stepping stone, there's an element. But do you think it's good being that ambitious, but then sometimes it's good to just zone out, you know, to give that advice, give that, you know, kind of mentorship, you know, to the younger coaches, because everyone wants to do things 100 miles an hour, when sometimes the best thing to do is actually try three or four, new ideas and see what you're good at, so therefore you can progress in the game, what of what level you work at, because there's nothing wrong with being the best under-12s coach. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's people always say, oh, I work in football as a head coach, and they think, you know, the top level. Well, the top level could be any age group. Is that something you've tried to work with the kind of staff you've had, or also what you've worked on in the last maybe decade or so?
Yeah, both individually and collectively with the staff that I've worked with throughout my career. Look, I think it's really important. It's a really good question, to be honest with you, because I think you'll find now that a lot more people, because there's an opportunity, rightly so now, for females to jump up the pathway, so to speak, because there's more opportunities. They just see that end goal being their A licence. And you've, like you said, yeah, you can be the best foundation coach, and that's your skill and that's your niche. I also think that let's learn that trade and learn it really well, because that's going to benefit you as an individual, but more importantly, the players you're working with. Like, again, throughout my career, I mentioned before, I've had quite a sporadic set of skills that I've acquired throughout my career. And that's also aided my coaching as well, because I think it's important. And the biggest thing for me is don't be afraid of failing. So I think a lot of people want to do that. They want to go on certain things and a knockback is a step to somewhere else for me,
yeah,
as well. But I think, to answer your question, it's really important, I think, that I've got a coach, for example, in the environment at the moment. She's been with me in Liverpool for 6 years, and she's a master at a craft at foundation phase, fantastic coach, and now she's wanting to obviously make the next step. So that's right for her at the moment. She's been there, you know, in terms of where we are, but I've had coaches come in and want to move up the next year because they've been at the under-12s and want to go to the 14s. But I think really important as well, just by moving up the age groups, it doesn't mean to say that that's the best environment, because, as you probably well know yourself, a foundation phase for me is such a sponge where we can really affect the everything around the four corners in the players. We're just opening up now, we're at an ETC at 9s, 11s and 13s, and that fundamentally for me is the most important age groups, because you're wanting to affect that positive mindset and growth mindset at that age group.
Yeah.
Not saying that the other ones are negative, because there's different, obviously, characteristics we'll go through with, obviously, the different age ranges. But for me, that's where you can really make a massive effect for me, what I get most joy out, because you'll see that instant. It's an acknowledgement, isn't it, as well, because the girls are so, you know, in terms of what we work with, they just want to learn, they want to ask questions. And I think that, for me, is, again, going back to your question with the coaching piece, just learn the skills, learn your knowledge, and then look at the opportunities that comes throughout, because that for me, is basically the foundation of their coaching career.
Yeah, because that's something you've been working on for, you know, a long time. You know, we go back maybe to Leeds and the Centre of Excellence, and these are kind of wean these talent IDs and the kind of emerging talent kind of centres were kind of started to come around. You know, what was your kind of role there? What did you try and implement? Is it more just to try and get people through the door, or was it more just to advance the women's game, or is it just trying to just make, again, it's like you're trying to be a better coach too, so you can develop yourself a bit more with people maybe that are more advanced, or more, you can kind of, again, you can be a sponge to them, you know, to learn from them. Is that something you try to do at Leeds?
Yeah, so just to explain that, so I saw that to play when I was at Leeds a long time ago, and I was actually coaching there. I was just coaching as an under-16s head coach. Opportunity came to be the technical director while I was playing at that point at the time, it was semi-pro. So for me, it was, one, acting as a role model in that environment. Two, obviously coming into the environment, looking at how I can impact the girls. At first, I was a little bit naive to that, because I think you are. I mean, I was quite early in my coaching journey. And it was about push, get the girls through. But as I've progressed throughout my career and obviously matured myself as an individual and as a person, it's understanding that that's not relative and it's not as important as probably the rest of the females that's not going to happen for. So the one or two that's going to make the first team, we know that, will aid that journey. But more importantly, the females that probably aren't potentially going to make that, what are we going to do for them, and what's their journey going to look like as well? And that's really, I think, where my lessons have learned early on in my career to where we are now.
Yeah, because we look at the game and it's a very, very small percentage make it as pros. But sometimes you've got the the 16-year-old who wants to be a coach, but they're not going to be good enough to play, or the 35-year-old who's retired, but maybe want to be the working with the 16s or the 14s or the 10s, you know. And going back to that, is that something that you try and help? I think it's the expression, always help the person, because they can develop themselves, so therefore we can improve the person to learn about different skills and, you know, different mindsets, but also exploring different avenues. Is that something you try to implement kind of from a younger age, so therefore you can start to implement your kind of way of thinking, your learning on the younger players, so therefore it's like, do you know what, you might be a pro footballer, you might not, but there's nothing wrong with being a PE teacher, there's nothing wrong with working in the game as a sports scientist, to this, to that. Is that something you try and help when you were kind of at the start of your journey?
Yeah, 100%, especially when we came into Liverpool, quite evident that it was, you know, I mean, I think that's come across the game in general anyway, that it has been more player focused, because that's what it's always been like. But especially with the FA's dual career piece came in 2018, that was to look at help support females from 16 plus in the under-21s environment, and looking at, we're quite evident that we don't have a scholarship system in place at the moment, obviously within the female game, but that's going to come in fruition in the future. But we have to help support that as well. So it was understanding that, you know, at the end of their journey within the RTC female pathway, what does it look like for them if they're not going to, you know, get a club at pro, or even best, you know, even the girls that are coming out, especially the first team now coming to the end of the career, what's it going to look like for them? So just to go back to your question, is it's really important, I think, that it's not a dictatorship where my values and my beliefs is dictated to what, because everybody's got different values and beliefs of that. Thankfully, it fits exactly what the four pillars are within the Liverpool way. And I think the key thing is to build an environment where it's just, well, one, that is obviously inclusive in terms of everybody feels that they can have a voice and be able to articulate themselves and be able to open up, but more importantly as well, that it's an environment that's fun and engaging, but also is there to nurture and develop as well. So the environment piece for me is key, and then the values piece we can instill in that, and obviously throughout, and that's just not within the players, the parents as well, which we've had really success in the last 4 or 5 years to do, and obviously the staff.
Yeah, we'll talk about Liverpool in a minute, because that's the key aspect of what you're doing at the moment. But going back to kind of Doncaster, Rovers, Bells, you know, it's a huge club, you know, and it's you had a number of roles there. Can you tell us what they are, but also how you try to adapt each one to make you become that better person, so you can develop yourself into maybe 3 or 4 different roles that you've had?
Yes, obviously you mentioned Leeds United, so I was there for a number of years as a player, and obviously then transferred into coaching when I ended my career, and when I retired, became assistant coach to Rick Passmore. That was a good few years ago. That was before the WSL came into inception. Unfortunately, we had to pull back the licence because of funding, which is a bigger story for that. So Leeds United at that point didn't have a WSL team, even though it was very successful. We had Steph Horton there, we had Alan White there, just to name a few. So that team had to disband, then move on to different pastures new, which was disappointing. But in terms of that, for me personally, moving on from Leeds, the Doncaster Bells was, rightly so, it was a massive club, and it is still a massive club, but the history there is just there to be seen for itself. So in terms of my development, it was challenging for me, because I was then looking to create a brand new pathway. There was a grassroots environment there, but not an elite pathway involved. So to try and change the mindset of obviously parents and players and staff to then transfer over to a kind of an elite pathway was a challenge. So that for me opened up a challenges for me and developed me as an individual, how I build up relationships and try and educate and put that point across. But yeah, it was, for me, it was probably I had a very fantastic 4 years at Doncaster Bells. I had a fantastic mentor called Julie Chipchase, who I worked with at the County FA when I was a footballing officer as well at West Riding, who mentored me throughout my journey, not just as a person, you know, as a person, well as me as a player, but also as my coaching career, very influential on that as well. And her ethos was very much about development and supporting coaches. So it was challenging in some respects, because obviously, as you may be aware, the funding is minimal. And that, I think, was the biggest challenge for me. She wanted to go certain places with things, and you couldn't because of restriction of funding. So I think for me, that's the skill set now that I have, is looking at getting the best out of the circumstance that we're in. of where we are with that. And now they're in a thriving, was RTC, now into an ETC. Obviously, unfortunately, where they are in the pyramid is just down to, unfortunately, funding and backing. And that's not from a fault of Doncaster Rovers, it's just the game now where it's evolved into something a lot bigger than what it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, because you know that, like, it was at Reading, you know, obviously they were one of the best teams in the WSL, and now it's overrun by, you know, Manchester United, Chelsea, Man City, all these, you know, even including Liverpool, you know, the kind of first team, and it just kind of changed the landscape. But go back to that kind of bit of funding, and I always find the coach, see if you've got a lot of funding, you start to rely on it, but if you don't have a lot of funding, you have to rely on your brain a bit more and imagination, using the college system to get player the analysis in. You know, like when I was a 17s head coach, the first thing I did was, okay, I've got X amount of funding, but I can't afford to bring in this, and this, but what I can do, I can get a strength and conditioning coach that I know from a person who's a mentor to a video analysis, you know, from a sponsor, which was £100, you know, for like an iPad or something like that, you know, like a tablet, recorded everything, and helped the players become that a little bit better. But see, as a developer, do you think that's such a big thing, sometimes not having that funding, so therefore you obviously, if there's not a lot of funding, you can't do, there's not a lot of staff, but you can still rely on delegation, helping others. Is that something you try to do, or do you think it's a skill to have that now, to say, do you know what, I can do three people's jobs, but I can actually delegate that and that, but not, I can focus on the players more, so therefore I can develop them more with the resources that I might not have, but then when it comes to the kind of better clubs or more advanced, then they know, okay, I've learned the morals of this, the values, so therefore it improves the player a bit more, and the coach.
Yeah, I think 100%. I think it is a skill, because it's something that we've had to afford to deal with throughout the women's game. And yes, there is a lot of money in the game now, especially WSL. But I think you'll find as well that there's still challenges in them environments, because as the game's evolving, budgets is always going to be that bottom line of what we're talking about, and the funding is irrespective if you're Man United, Man City, or Arsenal, for example. It's, you know, that's relevant to where they are, but they still have to manage that budget according to where they are in or where they want to aspire to be. But in terms of that, I think key thing for me is understanding what your resources are and what your needs are, and then looking at the strategy to formulate that, and looking more importantly, what, not just for what's going to happen in 2 months, 4 months, 6 months time, but what's it like in 1, 2, 3, 4 years time. Do you know what I mean? And how you can grow that, yeah. Rather than being quite restrictive. And you're absolutely spot on what you mentioned about creating partnerships with other organisations to support that piece. And that's something that I've done throughout my career, is working with, like, say, universities and looking at placement students, internships. It still frustrates me a little bit, I'm not going to lie, Laurie, that we're still in a place where now we can only offer casual contracts, yeah, in the women's pathway, and that's something that the FA, you know, and, but again, it's a women's games problem at the moment. I'm hoping that we can get to that point where we can look at putting contracts into the you know, the youth pathway for that reason, because, you know, the more time, and more importantly, for individuals like the coaches and the staff in that environment, and feel valued as well, for them to develop, as well as obviously aiding the development of the players.
Yeah, because that, maybe I'll go back to that thing about the, you talked about, like, the casual contracts and volunteering and all that, and volunteering is a big part, you know, but sometimes the volunteering sometimes doesn't pay a bill, you know what I mean? Like, if you've been doing this for 10, 15, 20 years, and you're asked to do 15 to 20 hours of voluntary work, you know, plus a full-time job, it's bang on impossible. If you've got a family, you know, but if it's not, then it's, think. But do you think that's a big, you said about the women's game, but do you think it's actually a thing across the men's game too? People ask for a lot and get very little return, because they see a badge, or they see something that's, maybe they see the big lights, when sometimes the best thing to do is actually to zone out and basically learn your craft from a younger age. Because I remember when I was younger, you know, everyone wanted to, you get put into the nurseries, the primary schools, and actually I love that, because that was part of my skill set, I do as part of my business. But you're never going to be this 14s coach, or never the 16th, because there was always someone ahead of you. But because they were the coach's son, or there's a relationship, do you think it's more that sometimes as a coach now, we just have to zone out and see what's best for you as a person? So saying no to jobs, saying no to things is actually a strength, you know, instead of a weakness. Is that something you've kind of seen in the last maybe couple of years, that sometimes it actually takes a bit more, you know, to ask questions, you know, and develop yourself, step out and then go in with a clearer vision, a clearer idea of what you want to do?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, going back to your question, obviously I've referenced women's game a lot because it's the most of my experience I've been in. But rightly so, I mean, the men's game, down from the Premiership and Championship below that, in the football pyramid, right away to grassroots, I think it's important to reference grassroots coaches and the volunteers in that network. Without that, we wouldn't have a game. Yeah. And that's in both environments, and I think everybody's aware of that. And, you know, we can talk about the funding issues in there, but, you know, that's a bigger problem again with that. But on to your question, I think there's, going back to the question about, you know, should you be jumping at the pathway or should you be looking at doing other things and help support your development? I mean, I've gone in and volunteered in the football community at Leeds when I was playing there, and I don't think it's a harm to that. But to the value of as an individual, I think it's key that putting yourself out there, coming out of your comfort zone and prepared to go that extra mile, because I think you've got to be passionate at what you do if you want to succeed. Yeah. We were talking about this. We had a mentoring workshop on Monday, because I've created a female mentor workforce group with the County FA in partnership with the FA County FA. And we were talking about this in terms of the expectation now of coming in, if you've got a qualification, that you've got a kind of a role. And I don't think that's the mindset now where we need to. I think, I'm not saying that we need to go back down the volunteer role. I think that's absolutely no. But I do think there needs to be a value of maybe stepping out of that, putting yourself out there, but more importantly as well, but not to the detriment of you as an individual as well, and being, for what I mean, to, you know, being overused in that environment as well as a volunteer. So I think for me, the most important piece is looking at maybe what they want out of that career piece. But that's one thing that we could speak about for a long time, really, isn't it? Because it's a big animal to kind of navigate around. So.
Yeah, that'll be maybe part 7 of our conversation. Yeah. But it just... you talk about mentors, you know, like the job you're in at Liverpool, you're a women's and girls manager, and there's a lot involved, but you'll have mentors that you rely on, but you've always, like, people look at you as a mentor. How important is it to have one of them? And then we'll talk about kind of your role at Liverpool in a moment.
Yeah, I think mentor is a bigger piece. It's not just coaches, is it? It's mentoring. It's looking at us creating role models and leadership and looking at support mechanism, and that's something that we're creating with a group. I'm actually identifying 4 mentors to work with that group that I've just mentioned on Monday to go in and help support that. We do have FA mentors, but obviously due to funding, you know, there's only one in each county, unfortunately, maybe 2. So I'm hoping we've got a niche now, partnership with the County FA and with Night Game On to help support that. But to answer your question, in terms of mentor, for me, it's a two-way piece. It's a 360 approach to mentor, mentee, and I think it's peer-to-peer. It could be a peer-to-peer. I mean, when I was speaking to the group on Monday, the female that was coming in that didn't have any qualifications at all, right up to be a licence, learning from them as well. I think it's understanding that you can stand there and say you're a mentor, but you are still learning as well. So I think it's that 360 approach to it is the important piece. But for me as a mentor, I think it's just been that, for me, support mechanism is the biggest thing for me.
Yeah.
And how that works as well, because it's, we really want to get away from the place where I'm standing on the sideline or the mentor is standing on the sideline and just doing that tick box exercise of kind of critiquing.
Yeah.
It's about building relationships and sitting down and understanding what the needs are.
Yeah.
And then kind of just guiding them and help support them and make their own solutions to the issues or problems we've got.
And now Liverpool, you know, it's obviously, you've got, that's a kind of different animal again, because it's like, this probably one of the biggest clubs in the WSL, you know, and you've got, but as in the academy, you obviously, you need to rely on a lot of the younger players because of funding, but also it helps with the kind of, when there's injuries or you need to, you know, for quotas and all this, but what does your job involve? And is there a set kind of away from a pathway to the first team, you know, is there a set way of playing? But is it that through the academy, the club, or through the manager? Because sometimes it is a bit of both, you know. Is it something you've tried to link? But also with Matt, you know, you must speak to him regularly to develop that kind of program to make sure that everyone's happy, you know, because in the day, he's at the top to get results. You get another type of result to get, but again, it's less pressure to an extent, but still more pressure to succeed in a way.
Yeah, perfect. So I'll just answer the question in terms of women girls role. So just prior to November, I was a cabin manager for the women. Okay. So I was there for 4.5 years, and in November I moved across to LFC Foundation, which is women girls manager. So that's now a different role in terms of different department within the club. So I'll go back to my experience as the cabin manager, which I oversaw the basically all the pathway down from U21s right down to, at that point, under-10s, was at the RTC. So to answer your question about in terms of philosophy, yes, that was brought down from Matt. You know, when he first came in, he was quite, you know, transparent in that, you know, we don't have massive budgets to compete with the top three or four probably, but we do need, it's really important to have a pathway and a structured pathway in place. And the support that he's put in there through the first team environment as well has been absolutely class and outstanding. He's got a revolving door policy, so you know you can go down any time and speak to him and everything else. And the first team coaching staff come down probably every cycle of the coaching formula. They'll come down and help support that kind of delivery part, or looking at the philosophy or the systems of play, for example. So that, when Matt came in, was a bit of a shining light for me, because we didn't really have, we had something, but we didn't really have that leadership piece in place that really, right, okay, the coaches can work towards, and look, this is exactly what the outcome we're needing here. And I think that's helped spur on then the team and the structure as well. And then looking at the women and girls piece now, that's a bigger piece altogether. So I know, obviously, the bottom end of the pathway, along with a wider spread of obviously priorities in them, that's one being the female mentoring, disability and inclusion as well in that. So looking at the community piece, but more importantly as well, the YDP groups. But yes, we are still aligned, and it always has been, even prior to Matt, there's been a pathway right from the eights, right the way through to the first team.
Okay, a couple more questions. The women's football obviously is getting more focus, obviously the Euros and the Worlds, World Cup. But what are the things we need to improve on, but also the kind of strength and weaknesses in the kind of women's game? Probably funding will be probably one of the biggest things, but what's the biggest strength probably in the women's game? Is it the coaching? Is it the staff? Is it the players? Is it everything? Or is it more to do with what you put in, you get out, basically? Is it the kind of way?
I get asked this question quite a lot, and a lot. It's really interesting because there is obviously a difference between the men's and women's game. You know, we can't hide from that. There is a slight difference in terms of that. And we can't, you know, it's run by two governing bodies, which is obviously a funding piece in itself. But where we are with WSL at the moment, I think we're in a very good place, and you've seen that now with the world stage, with the England results and what they've achieved. And it's not just about the results now. They've opened a legacy piece for this, and it's not just where the women's game is talking about it and people that make a run to the games, everybody's speaking about it. So in terms of what's good about the game, that for me has just alleviated everything. But what concerns me a little bit is now in terms of the infrastructure of that and how we can make sure that's sustainable but also leaves that legacy piece and continues that, because rightly the funding and the staffing piece, what I mentioned before, it needs to be a bit more robust and help support that as well. The FA do a good job with what they have. I'm sure a lot of people are quite critical about what they've done or what they haven't done. That's another conversation, but in my experience, you know, they've been really positive of what they try to do. But, you know, I know they talks about forming a new group with the PL and the FA to help them push the pathway on even further. That's something, again, that we come up to. But I think the positive thing out of the women's game is it's that family feel. I mean, you'll see that every female after a game will go along to the crowd and they could spend up to 45 minutes signing autographs. And it's that connection that they've got with the fans, and it's that kind of just humble that they're there because, yes, some of them do get paid and potentially now a lot of more money than what they ever have done, which they do deserve. But it's been that humble, I mean, that person that they understand that they actually do are connected to the fans and do want it. They're playing for the absolute love of the game. And that's right the way from grassroots and still into the England national team. Now you can see that they're passionate about what they do, especially the girls that's been there probably coming to the end of the career or coming to the end of that cycle of the career now.
Yeah. And kind of last two, what do you do to improve your CBD to develop yourself to become that bit better?
I'm going to be quite honest and open. Over probably the last 2 or 3 years, I have really kind of put myself to the side and put people before me. And that's something that's a detriment of me, because I've always wanted to make sure everybody's leadership or skill sets or CPD has always been improved on. I'm just coming to the end of my A licence now, which I applied for and successfully got obviously a place on that. I've enjoyed that thoroughly. The mentoring side of things now, creating a CPD for that. I've obviously Matt Beard has been mentoring me through my A licence, and I've got good connections with other people as well. So through the FA, through Crest Wellburn, he's obviously connecting through that as well, so with the mentoring group. And then I will be going down and shadowing some of the 21s and 23 sessions in the men's game. So I've kind of put that to the forefront of my mind now and looking at for me to obviously develop me as well.
And the final question we ask is, what does mindset mean to you? How would you describe your mindset?
Mindset, 100% growth. 100% growth. I'm always looking for, one, for development, I think is key. I think you have to be sometimes self-critical, but also when you get critiqued in a positive manner, don't take it as a negative and look to how that improvements can be made. And I think for me personally, like I mentioned before, as well, is pushing on others and wanting them to succeed and giving them the environment that they can then be, you know, the best they can be, not just as a player, but also as a member of staff.
No, brilliant. Okay, thanks again, Julie, for your time.
No problem.